Water.
Privatization.
Electricity.
Privatization.
Healthcare.
Privatization.
Education.
Privatization.
What happens when corporations treat those public services as commodities to be bought and sold on the open market? And how are people in Canada and around the world protecting the public sphere and resisting corporate greed?
It's coming by leaps and bounds.
Thousands of people die because this economic model was imposed to war.
It is not sustainable. And we have an opportunity to stop it now.
You're listening to Conning the People, a five-part documentary series about privatization in Canada in an international context.
I'm Asad Ismi.
I'm Kristen Schwartz.
We'll be investigating the effects of privatization globally and locally on healthcare, education, electricity, and water.
For the next half hour, we'll be focusing on privatization of education in Canada, especially in Ontario and British Columbia. Accessible public education ensures social mobility. It's the main basis for a stable, cohesive society. It's vital to a healthy economy, democratic decision-making, and a sense of belonging and community. Only an elitist, unequal, divided, and unstable society can result from the privatization of education. But as with healthcare, the federal government implemented massive cuts in public education spending starting in 1993, and the provinces followed suit. Since 1993, $7 billion has been cut from post-secondary education and training in Canada. Between 1983 and 2001, public funding as a percentage of university operating revenue dropped from 74% to 55%. All this has led to skyrocketing tuition fees in public universities, which are turning them into de facto private ones. Tuition fees have gone up by 135%, which has escalated student debt and put post-secondary education out of the reach of lower-income students. Law school at the University of Toronto now costs $22,000 a year. The cutbacks have created an opening for private universities, which are being set up in BC, and Ontario has passed a law allowing such institutions. Annual spending for public elementary and secondary schools is growing by only 1%, as opposed to 11.2% in 1975. In Ontario alone, education spending cuts under the Conservative Harris government averaged $2.3 billion a year. Funding cuts are gutting the public secondary school system to such an extent that even business groups have expressed concern about this. Textbooks have to be shared in 69% of Ontario schools, which have to raise private funds for every classroom need, from library books to paper and pencils. Not surprisingly, enrollment in private schools is increasing dramatically. Earl Manners is the recently retired president of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, OSSTF. He spoke about the education policy of the Harris and Eves Conservative governments.
This government deliberately created a crisis in education. This government took billions and billions of dollars out of education, over $2 billion to be precise. They deliberately bankrupted public education in order to undermine confidence in our public schools and public institutions so that they could privatize our education system service by service, program by program, and then ultimately to hand over education to private sector managers. This government doesn't have any real new ideas. The idea of charter schools and vouchers and the tax credit for private schools are ideas that formed the basis of the hard right Republican Party in the United States, and they are trying to transplant them here. The fact they haven't been able to get away with it to the extent they wanted to, I think, is a testimony to the solidarity and the ability of teachers and education workers to fight back in a strategic and forthright manner.
The Conservative government's privatization agenda was wide-ranging.
They attacked library programs and teacher librarians. They attacked the guidance counseling services in every school. They tried to undermine special education programs. And so they cut both teachers and support staff, whether it be education assistants or professional student service personnel, the psychologists, the social workers, the speech-language pathologists. All in order to redefine education as a commodity to be bought and sold on the market, and that it have a limited function, that its primary purpose was to educate young people for the world of work, not to be active and engaged citizens in our society. What this has meant for students is they've seen their community schools closed in many places, fewer teachers teaching more students in larger class sizes. There have been long waiting lists for students with special needs to get the kind of attention that they need to succeed. And our schools have been allowed to physically deteriorate through underfunding custodial maintenance services, as well as repairs in the ongoing cleanliness of the school has deteriorated. And I think that has affected the well-being of students, the learning environment in the school as a whole.
Contracting out school services to the private sector was a major part of privatization.
They were trying to force school boards to look for the cheapest delivery model possible. And the cheapest delivery model are private contractors that offer a service at greatly reduced rates using non-unionized labor. But once they've got the contract, then the prices skyrocket because they've got the school board hooked on providing the service. So you underfund. You try and encourage the school board, in this case, the employers, to privatize services. That leads to a weakening of the role of employees in the decision-making process through their union. And then you encourage alternative education programs under the guise of choice, and which is just a euphemism for privatization. If the school board can't provide the wide range of programs they used to in the past, then parents and students begin to look elsewhere. It really does turn education into a commodity, and that's what's happened here in Ontario. There have been a proliferation of what I would call niche schools that are quick profit schools, quick credit schools that have sprung up to deal with groups of students that are no longer able to get the kinds of services and programs they used to get in the school system.
Private school enrollment has doubled.
Less than 5% of the students going to elementary and secondary school are in private schools. But the increase since 1995, since the Conservative government came in, is significant. The enrollment has more than doubled. So if it is around 5% now, it was less than 2.5% 7 years ago. If that trend continues, our public education system would be the last refuge for the poor and those students whose needs are so great that the private school system wouldn't want to educate them because it's too expensive and they can't make a profit on it. Obviously, the Tories have had some success in undermining confidence or restricting the kinds of services that used to be available in the public school system.
The Conservatives' policies were imported from the United States.
This government operates on American-style politics in all ways, and they define their constituents as taxpayers, not citizens. Mm-hmm. So that and said that they were not going to try and be a government for all the people. They were just going to be a government for the people that supported them. And as a result, there's an ideological polarization. There is a polarization between rich and poor. This government attacked the most vulnerable and gave all their largesse to the rich. They attacked public employees, all to encourage private enterprise. And to them, there really is no such thing as society. We're all just individuals that meet their needs by buying and selling on the market. They divide people into various camps based on that sort of consumerist mentality.
Jeff Hexamer is head of the Collective Bargaining Department at the Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association, OECTA.
The overall question is the effect of privatization on public education. I think the one macro major kind of effect that we don't look at is that by government policy, we've chosen to apply the business paradigm to the public school. Right? So it's changed from this attitude of ministers and government trying to protect the services that they believe are good for the people to ministers and government taking it and saying, oh, well, I can do one better. I can cut by $1.5 billion. And we're told that, you know, when it goes around the table and they say, okay, who can get $1 billion out of their sector so that we can do the tax cuts, some of these ministers would say, oh, I can do two. And I can get more out of my sector. So, like, this is not, you know, production capitalism. This is a state-run enterprise. If we continue with this degradation of schools and hospitals, it's frightening the alternative that you come to, like a constantly degraded public system. How many schools do we have to close in Toronto? Like, we had at the beginning of this government, we had about 196 schools. We're down to about 175 in the elementary, and we had about 36 secondary schools, and we closed 3 secondary schools last year.
The discredited policies of Ontario's Tories are being replicated in British Columbia, where the Liberal government of Gordon Campbell has eliminated thousands of teaching positions, frozen education funding, and deregulated university tuition fees. Larry Keane is Director of Research and Technology at the British Columbia Teachers Federation.
Well, there are significant increases in privatization are taking place since the Liberal government came into power here, both at the post-secondary level. There are a number of things that have happened, and particularly at the kindergarten to grade 12, the public school level. Not only have they cut funding to education, and consequently 45 schools were closed last year, and there will be at least that many this year and probably more next year, the government in January of 2002 brought in legislation that wiped out large sections of our collective agreements, which had things such as limits to class size, staffing formulas for English second language staffing, for students with special needs, for counseling, for libraries. And they simply wiped out all of those provisions, and in the law said that they could not be negotiated in the future. And the impact of that has been incredible in terms of just a change from last year to this year. There are about 2,000 fewer full-time equivalent teachers in the system, and the projection is that each of the next 2 years there will be cuts of that level. And so, of course, the conditions in classrooms have changed. We now have classes as large as 40 in some places, and situations that we haven't seen for 25 years that we fought and built through the collective bargaining process some very good conditions for our schools, and those are just gone overnight.
Worsening conditions in public schools force people to use private ones.
The impact of this type of thing is to encourage people to look to private alternatives, and in this province, the private schools do receive government funding as well. So you have the elite schools being able to charge, a healthy tuition on top of getting half of the amount per student amount that the public schools get in the district where they're located. So it really encourages people to look outside because they see the deterioration of the conditions that exist in the public schools. And it really fits with the general philosophy of the government, which is to get government out of anything it can and to reduce taxes. They brought in a massive tax cut the first day they were in power to essentially create the problem that now they have to cut back on all public services because they have a deficit, which they created by this massive tax cut that went primarily to those at the higher income levels. Their real objective is to privatize as much as possible and to deregulate anywhere they can.
BC universities have been hard hit by the Campbell government's privatization agenda.
The post-secondary level as well, primarily two things. One, to again encourage private training programs, and secondly, to deregulate tuition and allow for it to increase dramatically. The percentage is were as high as 60%. University of British Columbia is doing consultations with students now, and it's looking at a 30% increase again this year. The one that really is going to be a concern to us is that they're increasing the tuition in the education faculty. So for the one-year teacher training program that you take after you have a degree, it would cost $7,500. Because they consider this to be a professional program, and they're trying to move all of the professional programs onto a full cost recovery basis so that there isn't any public support in those.
The Canadian Federation of Students has campaigned against tuition increases in Canada's colleges and universities for several years. Joel Duff, Ontario chairperson for the Federation, explains the connection between privatization and rising tuition.
Effectively, the government is attempting to shift who pays for a public education from society onto the individual. Of course, when it comes to students and tuition fees, that has an extremely negative effect on those students or those individuals who don't have the same resources. Ontario now has the second highest tuition fees in the country, but most, I think, alarmingly, we have the lowest per capita spending for post-secondary education. Tuition fees across the country have gone up by about 135%. In Ontario, they've gone up by probably closer to 145% on average in the past 10 years. And the effect, of course, has been that students are now shouldering an incredibly more burdensome debt load. The average student now graduates with about $25,000 debt after a four-year program. That's up from $8,000 about 10 years ago.
Tuition fee increases are creating a highly elitist education system, especially in the area of professional degrees.
Here in Ontario, the government deregulated tuition fee increases for professional programs back in 1998. And that's meant that students studying in law, medicine, dentistry, dental hygiene, and in many graduate programs have seen their tuition fees go up by as much as 700%. In just 4 years. And, of course, the recent decision of University of Toronto Law has been that their tuition fees are going to go up to $22,000 a year. The effect also of such dramatic increases in tuition fees in professional programs is that we're sending a message to all students graduating from U of T Law that in order to be able to pay off their student debt, they're going to have to get a job on Bay Street. Now, I don't know about you, but I think that we need an education system that delivers a quality education to students who are going to study law in order to use it to do public defender work, to work in remote communities, or to work for governmental or non-governmental organizations in an advisory role. The fact of the matter is that we need educated doctors and lawyers to work at all levels in society, not just in those occupations that are going to deliver the most personal income.
Corporate forces are trying to privatize education all over the world.
The crisis that we're facing here in Ontario, a crisis of quality and a crisis of accessibility, which are created by the massive government funding cuts, are really part of a larger political agenda, in fact, a global agenda, because we're seeing the same forces at work in countries throughout the world. Places like Britain, which previously had no tuition fees, have implemented tuition fees by the late 1990s because of the pressure from other Western economies. And we're seeing all throughout Latin America now an attempt to try to undermine universal education systems, for example, in Mexico and in other countries, trying to undermine them and implement a private model. In Africa, students are demonstrating in the streets to try and stop the implementation of private bank loans, and tuition fees as a means of funding public education. Our country is working with other superpowers to try to leverage public education out of the hands of the public and to deliver it into the hands of the private sector. What we've got is an economic system that has exploited most current markets. And now many corporations are looking to pry open new markets. And they've identified public education as being a relatively untapped market in many Western economies. In fact, in many economies around the world. So here in Ontario and in Canada, where we have a public system of education, that works against the corporate interest. Because in, I guess in crude market terms, public subsidies to public institutions are considered an unfair trade advantage. And regulations on how much tuition fees can increase are seen as curtailing the ability of corporations to reap as much economic reward. And so we've got a situation where corporations now have an interest in helping our governments dismantle public education so that there is no effective competition in the education marketplace.
In 2002, Ontario's Conservative government passed a law allowing private for-profit universities to operate in the province.
The law was drafted and implemented with absolutely no consultation with any of the stakeholders in the education system. And it was met with great opposition by students, faculty, and university administrators. What it means is that private for-profit businesses are going to be able to set up shop in Ontario and sell a degree for probably three times the amount as a degree at a public institution. Mm. And they never have finish, but you push too hard. Even numbers got limits. Why did one straw break the camel's back? Here's the secret. The million other straws underneath it. It's all mathematics. Mighty most definitely. It's simple mathematics. Check it out. I revolve around science. What are we talking about here?
Ontario is not the only province which has opened the door to private universities. Jim Turk is executive director of the Canadian Association of University Teachers.
So the first private for-profit university in Canada was established by the Alberta government. It was the DeVry Institute that was given university status. And then very shortly afterwards, the New Brunswick government followed suit by letting a privately owned outfit that wanted to sell online education to civil servants in Ottawa have university status. Their name is UNEXUS. It was originally Landsbridge University. As far as I know, it hasn't been very successful at all. Last time I saw, they had less than 100 students. Since then, both the BC government and the former Ontario government had indicated that they were in favor of setting up processes for allowing private universities, and the BC government has gone along to do that. In its case, it's Sea to Sky University. It's been set up in Squamish, British Columbia. It's a non-profit private university, unlike DeVry and UNEXUS.
Private universities have failed in Britain and Australia.
Part of our concern about the appearance of private universities, private for-profit universities in Canada, is that there's been some experience of them in Britain and in Australia, which have post-secondary systems like ours. In Britain, there was a private for-profit university created called Buckingham University, and in Australia there was a single private for-profit university called Bond University. And both of these have existed for a decade and reveal that they add nothing to the post-secondary education system in those two countries. They attract very few students. They have no impact on the educational scene. They don't offer any more choice. They don't offer any better quality or any specialties that aren't available in a public university. In short, they've offered no advantages whatsoever. So why governments in Canada would want to follow suit is absolutely beyond me.
Private universities do receive funding and support from the public sector.
The students attending them have access to the Canada Student Loan Program and to government-run student loan programs. And so taxpayers who help underwrite those programs are underwriting the ability of students to pay exorbitant tuition to private for-profit companies. The New Brunswick government, for example, gave a host of tax breaks to UNEXUS. The federal government gave a grant to UNexus to help it become operational. I think it was an industrial grant. So there's a variety of ways through tax incentives, through lowering municipal property taxes, allowing people who teach there to have access to research grants and other things, that public dollars flow into these private institutions.
For Jim Turk, however, the real threat to public education is not private for-profit universities.
The far bigger threat to public universities in Canada is the kind of insidious commercialization and privatization that's occurring within the shell of the public university. As they become more strapped for cash because of the very significant cutbacks by the federal government and by most provincial governments, they're turning increasingly to the private sector to get money. And as they do this, the private sector has become increasingly bold in trying to attach strings to the money they provide to universities. So that there's a real good deal of pressure from the private sector to have university research serve the needs of the private sector. So instead of making a priority of the kind of basic research, which is what's of scientific importance, they encourage research that will be profitable in the short run for the corporation.
Sometimes corporate sponsorship can be particularly chilling. The Canadian Association of University Teachers has supported the case of Dr. Nancy Olivieri, a medical researcher, as she studied a promising new drug. When she found out that the drug could have very serious effects on some patients, she told the drug manufacturer, Apotex.
The drug company threatened to sue her if she published her findings. She turned to both Hospital for Sick Children and the University of Toronto, where she was a professor of medicine, and under whose auspices she was doing the research, to say, look at the situation I'm in. But neither the hospital nor the university provided her with adequate support. The hospital tried to muzzle her and at another point tried to fire her, and the university did not provide adequate support. It turned out at the time there were negotiations going on with the drug company and the university for $30 million in funding.
Corporate values and principles also permeate the day-to-day operations of universities.
But as well, the private sector tries to have public universities run as if they're private corporations. So an emphasis on user pay and making students pay increasingly larger portions of the total cost of education is one example of this sort of private mentality. Presidents of universities running them as if they're private corporations and viewing the historic involvement of faculty in the governance of the institution as a unnecessary, time-consuming, time-wasting practice that wouldn't be tolerated in the private sector, and why should it be tolerated in a public university. These kinds of ways of thinking are becoming more widespread in our universities. So even though they're public, they're taking on an increasingly commercial and corporate aura, which is really, I think, harming their fulfilling of their public functions. It's part of a larger sort of marketization of our society where everything is measured by its contribution to the bottom line. Instead of recognizing there's value in education itself and there's social value in having an educated society, we're told, well, the only importance of education is how much more money it allows you to make and how much more wealth it creates for the society, and we really should direct the operation of the institution in order to maximize economic benefits. And it should be run in the way any other, way General Motors is run.
You've been listening to Conning the People, Privatization in Canada.
This series was written and researched by Asit Ismi.
Produced by Kristen Schwartz.
And executive producer Asit Ismi.
Narrated by Kristen Schwartz and Asit Ismi.
Funded by the Canadian Labour Congress, Canadian Union of Public Employees, Canadian Union of Postal Workers, Communications, Energy and Paper Workers, Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, and the Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association.
Thanks also to CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto, Christiana Clements for technical assistance,
and Wing Hung C for sounds. Music credits for this segment: Money by Pink Floyd and Mathematics by Mos Def.
For copies of this program, call 416-595-5068 or email news@ckln.fm.
Thank you for listening.